This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Welcome back to the Oddball Aussie Podcast. I'm your host, Oz Oddball. Thank you for joining me. On tonight's episode, we are talking about the hypothesis that is Zoo Planet. And what is that exactly? Well, are we just a zoo for extraterrestrials? Or are we a terrarium of the gods? Let's discuss a bit more about that. It's going to get interesting. It's going to get deep. It's going to get very hypothetical in many cases. So bear with me. We're going to explain a lot of this. And at the end, the second half, we'll be diving into a lot of science-y type stuff. So if you're a big science nerd like me, definitely hang around to the end there. But before we begin, make sure you follow me on Twitter at Aussie Oddball, also on the Instagram and the Facebook page, The Oddball Aussie Podcast, and the T Public. Buy a shirt, buy some mugs, buy some stickers, whatever you want, and support the show. That's T Public, The Oddball Aussie Podcast. And make sure you're checking out all my friends over at Straight Up Strange Productions. That's a network that I am a part of, and they do some great work over there. We all have a great time working together, and you'll see many of us crossing over, and hopefully we're going to be doing a bit more of that in the next few months. Alrighty, so hope your weeks have been good. That's my phone because I'm completely unprofessional, and I thought I muted it, and because we've all right, so crack a bevy because I've got one, because it's going to be this could be a long episode, to be honest. Beer, sign that God wants me to be happy, or my handler, or whatever is in the sky watching my terrarium that I live on. That's, there'll be a callback to that. All right, so what are we talking about tonight? So the zoo hypothesis. The zoo hypothesis speculates on the assumed behavior and existence of technically advanced extraterrestrial life and the reasons they refrain from contacting Earth. It is one of the many theoretical explanations of the Fermi paradox. And the Fermi paradox is that if there was extraterrestrial life out there, why haven't we come in contact with it yet? So there's a lot of questions and a lot of answers for that. We're not getting into too much of that tonight because there's honestly that might be a whole episode. Few of the paradox might be a, you know, I don't know yet. But we can't take away from the fact that we also have the Drake equation. Now, the Drake equation is a probabilistic argument used to estimate the number of active communicative extraterrestrial civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy. So just in the Milky Way alone. The equation was written in 1961 by Frank Drake, not for purpose of quantifying the number of civilizations, but as a way to stimulate scientific dialogue at the first scientific meeting on the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI. The equation summarizes the main concepts which scientists must contemplate when considering the question of other radio communicative life. It is more properly thought of as an approximation than as a serious attempt to determine a precise number. So, yeah, essentially it's you take the amount of Goldilocks planets that are out there. So that's the ones that aren't too hot, aren't too cold, just right. And we take a number of how many of them are in the right spot as well, in the right rotation, and you give an average of how many life forms, how many habitable planets could be out there, and then you take the average of that and see how many civilizations there could be out there. It's all hypothetical. Now, where the zoo hypothesis sort of skews off is that the hypothesis is that alien life intentionally avoids communication with Earth. So that's, this isn't saying that they don't believe in aliens. This one is where the hypothesis is we believe in aliens, but they avoid communication with Earth. And one of its main interpretations is that it does so to allow for natural evolution and socio-cultural development, avoiding interplanetary contamination, similarly to people observing animals at a zoo. The hypothesis seeks to explain the apparent absence of extraterrestrial life, despite its generally accepted plausibility and hence the reasonable expectation of its existence. A variant on the zoo hypothesis suggested by the former MIT Haystack Observatory scientist John Allen Ball is the laboratory hypothesis, where humanity is being subjected to experiments with the Earth being a giant laboratory. So there we have our two different types. So we're talking a possible zoo, so a planet where some higher being than us has stumbled across us and has said, no, we can't do this. What about the last 10 planets that we've absolutely wiped out because we went down there and we gave them a virus that they couldn't control? That's one theory. The other theory is that that it's just a laboratory, just a big lab, planet-sized lab. Then there's a bunch of other stuff we're going into as we go along. So aliens might, for example, choose to allow contact once the human species has passed certain technological, political, or ethical standards. They might withhold contact until humans force contact upon them, possibly by sending a spacecraft to planets they inhabit. Alternatively, a reluctance to initiate contact could reflect a sensible desire to minimize risk. An alien society with advanced remote sensing technologies may conclude that direct contact with neighbors confers added risk to oneself without an added benefit. In the related laboratory hypothesis, the zoo hypothesis is extended such that the zookeepers are subjected humanity to experiments, a hypothesis which Ball describes as morbid and grotesque, overlooking the possibility that such experiments may be altruistic, i.e. designed to accelerate the pace of civilization, to overcome a tendency of intelligent life to destroy itself until a species is sufficiently developed to establish contact, as the zoo hypothesis. So essentially, the idea of that is to try and get a civilization to a point where no one is using nukes anymore, or no one's trying to kill each other, and then finally engaging with them to say, look, you guys have done well. How about we have a chat? We're here. We're your zookeepers, essentially, and we want to now let you out of the zoo, pretty much, and let you become part of this galactic society or something. To me, I don't know. We tend to stick to this thing of there tends to be two beliefs in ET studies, and that is the doomsday. They're coming over. They're taking over our governments, the lizard people, and all that. Don't get me started on the lizard people. But that's one theory, is that they're here. They, you know, think Independence Day. They're coming in. They're going to just take over us, and they want to enslave us eventually. The other idea is that they're angelic. They are so far above us and so much better than us that they know not to use nukes and not to fight and not to, and this angelic behavior is what's seen in a lot of study where people say, oh no, they're not trying to hurt us. They just want to look after us. Now, I get that. My thing is, I tend to sit in between there. I think when we think about it, if there's multiple civilizations out there, let's say they exist. Let's say we know that there's multiple advanced civilizations out there. You can't tell me that there's one single civilization in control of everything out there. If we can't get that knuckled down on planet Earth, what are we going to, how would we do that over the whole of just the Milky Way alone, let alone the rest of the universe? There's going to be some war fighters out there. There's going to be some fairly unevolved groups out there that will just be used for harvest planets and things like that. I mean, it bit of a cynical point of view, but I see how we've done it in our own planet with multiple cultures on every corner of the planet, and yes, they might be better than us, but are they? Could they be a ship full of slave traders? We don't know. This is really, all of this is speculation, and all of this is based on some pretty rough human reports of what's happened. But that's getting away from the zoo hypothesis, so let's get back into it. I'm getting a bit tongue-tied with hypothesis, saying it so many times. So we went through the what Drake and the Fermi paradox are, or the Drake equation and the Fermi paradox. So here's some facts just in regards to this zoo theory. Given the infinite size of the universe and its age, it would seem almost impossible that intelligent life is unique to our planet. In 1973, researcher John Ball, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, went as far as hypothesizing that aliens could be observing us like animals in a zoo. So the San Francisco-based messaging extraterrestrial intelligence, METI, met recently in Paris to revisit the alarming theory. This is back in 2014. I don't know. Well, pretty much from 2014 to 2020, they've been having discussions about this. It's actually quite interesting that it's ramped up a bit. So, although humanity has been searching for traces of intelligent extraterrestrial life for decades, we haven't found any evidence despite the billions of stars surrounding us. Given the size of the universe and its age, it would seem almost impossible that intelligent life is unique to our planet. So, we went through all the Fermi stuff. So, some have put forward the idea that aliens are around us as an omnipresent observer. One hypothesis came up with that aliens may well have acknowledged our existence and even observed us. Many people believe that not just observed us, but placed us here. A lot of people look at how out of place we seem within this whole planet. And some people do believe that we are we're a test subject. We're something that's been created in a lab with basically, let's take away all of their ability to defend themselves, but just give them a massive brain. You know, we do not have layers of hardened skin. We do not have fur. We do not have leathery outer skin. Likewise, we also don't have things like claws, sharp teeth, the ability to run super fast like a predatory animal can. So what made us such a strong predator? Now, of course, evolution is the one that we're all going around. But tonight, I just want you to put that off to one side, and let's just go down this rabbit hole of what if we are just a test tube subject, or what if we are, you could look at this two ways. So you could look at this that we are simply just a test tube subject, or you could look at it like, well, rather you could look at it simply as we are just an evolution of a fish that came onto land and evolved into the apes, and then from the apes into man, or into Neanderthal, and then you know, interbreeding and what have you, and then we created what we are today. Or you could look at it from the point of view that we are a test tube subject. Both of those will work in this conversation, because the idea is that the aliens came along at some point and started observing us. So one idea is that they just stumbled across us and found us. The other is that they implanted us here. Either way, it still results in very similar outcomes. So what would happen if this was true? Like, what makes people think things like this? Well, there's a lot of contactee and abductee reports that talk about the experiments being done on people and things of that nature. Now, that's a very interesting one, and that looks at the whole idea of is this like a checking up on us? Just because a lot of people say, well, why wouldn't they just go and abduct the president? Why wouldn't they go and abduct the queen? Now, the thing is that they're wanting to abduct. If you're a scientist working in the animal field, and you're trying to get, say, samples from a certain species, if you take out the leader, whether it's a matriarch or patriarchal society, whatever you want to look at. So let's think about lions. You take out the lead lion, and it's not something that you can just do over an hour. You need, it's an experiment that you need to remove them from the group, from the pride. How do you do that without having the pride go to pieces? Because if the Pride loses the Alpha Lion, it's going to go to pieces. There's going to be wars between factions. They will divide. That's what happens. That's what happens when an Alpha Lion dies of old age. Oh, not so much of old age, but surprised age. So maybe a sickness or an illness, that type of thing. So what if you, though, take away one of the outlier lines? What if you take away one that really doesn't matter much to the community? Well, nothing really changes. They might look for that lion. They might look for that cub. But they're not going to disintegrate into factional warfare. So when you think about it like that, it would make sense why you'd pick off a lot of people who are nobodies. You know, why you would abduct a lot of nobodies. You will still get the same data out of a nobody as you will out of the queen or out of the president or someone like that, but you can do it without being noticed, especially if you are wanting to keep this place as an observatory style experiment, one where you can just look upon, but you still need to take samples, core samples, data samples, things like that. Things still need to be done. And so yeah, it's an interesting concept, to say the least. And we're going to get some really out there thinking about this, because a lot of people think, okay, so does that mean that there's multiple craft flying around in space, keeping an eye on us? Well, not potentially, no. Now, potentially, think about it like this. And one interesting way to put it is, if you've ever watched the original Men in Black, the galaxy was on a little ball around the cat's neck. It was like a little trinket. Now, that when at the very end it zooms out, and that galaxy is a trinket amongst trinkets amongst trinkets, and it zooms out to be that's all these things are, is just these, what it ended up being, aliens playing with marbles, and every galaxy is a marble. Now think about it like that. Now imagine if what we conceive as our universe is simply a dome or a ball or just a, well, we could always go back into the, it's all made up, but we're not going to go too much into that. The idea, we could go into simulation theory, but we did a whole episode on that. So go and check out the simulation theory episode. It was really good. Well, not blowing my own horn, but I really enjoyed doing it. But imagine if our whole universe, as endless as we think it is, does have an end, and it's that of a terrarium. The whole thing is just one giant terrarium. And what we think of as a massive planet is actually something that they require some sort of microscope. Well, imagine if you've got an advanced species that is that advanced, they can control universes like this. They probably have better ways of looking at things. Microscopes probably aren't their biggest concern. They probably far succeeded that. So it's very hard to picture this, because our brains don't want to picture this. Our brains don't want to conceive of something like that, because it would mean that we're nothing but an experiment in a petri dish, essentially. Anything from a petri dish to a terrarium, you name it, if that's what we could be. That's going to the big scale. To the small scale, essentially, it's a spacefaring race that keeps an eye on us from a distance, maybe cloaking technology or something, and they just watch us. That's the small scale. Like if we're thinking this is a group just watching us and observing us, that's what you'd be thinking like that. From the big scale, it's like we're a marble in a bag of marbles that they can look at whenever they feel like it. Almost a snow globe, if you will. And not even that. We wouldn't be a snow globe. We'd be one of the flakes of fake snow in a snow globe. And whenever they want to mix it up and have a look at it, they can. So that's essentially what we're looking at. So a lot of people want to talk about Fermi stuff, and it is quite interesting. But what we've found more recently is that Astronomers have already found 4,001 confirmed exoplanets in our Milky Way galaxy and expect there to be over 50 billion exoplanets out there. For scientists gathering Paris today, the question is different. Why haven't we made contact with alien civilizations? Now, exoplanets are planets that don't necessarily fit within the normal stream of things. We'll get into exoplanets later on when we get into more the science side of it, the hardcore science stuff. So this is what came out of Paris. We're very interested in the scientific approach used in the analysis of the Fermi paradox and the search for intelligent life in the universe, said Cyril Birnbaum and Brigitte David at the Cité des Sciences et de l'Industrie. Probably butchered that. The Science Museum in Paris that's hosting today's meeting. The question, are we all alone, affects us all because it is directly related to humanity and our place in the cosmos. Today, leading researchers from the fields of astrophysics, biology, sociology, psychology, and history are meeting at the seat every 2 years. METI, the international METI, was it Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligences, organizes a one-day workshop in Paris. So this is becoming quite a big thing they're talking about, as I said before. So, and are extraterrestrials staying silent out of concern for our well-being? Will extraterrestrial intelligence be similar to human intelligence? Did life get to Earth from somewhere else in the galaxy, interstellar migration? These are all questions that they ponder once a year. Maybe it's just an excuse as well for a bunch of them to get together and talk weird shit and drink piss. I don't know. So this even, it ties into so many different aspects of the ET thing. So essentially, the idea of a zoo hypothesis, while we're still staying on the weirder side of the moon, I guess, weirder side of the marble, could break down everything. It could break down all of the weird stuff we talk about. So let's look at this from the point of view of all of the weird stuff we talk about. So from cryptids, UFOs and aliens to ghosts and the paranormal or supernatural, how can this all be broken down? So here's a very, this is some stuff I've been contemplating and this is some conversations I've been having with some researchers out there. And once again, we're talking concepts and we're talking hypotheticals here. So what would a cryptid be? If let's guarantee, yep, Earth is definitely a experiment. So let's go with experiment. Earth's experiment, whether it's an observatorial experiment or whether it's a observatory experiment rather, or whether it is a one where they can take part or they actually are on the planet being a part of the experiment. Regardless, so what would a cryptid be? A cryptid could be fellow experiments. They could be things that are introduced as part of another experiment to see what our reaction is. Let's chuck a... We've done this DNA modification on these moths and this human structure we created before. Let's chuck it down on Earth once in a while and see how they react. Thus, the Mothman. Let's see what happens when we dot a couple of these Bigfoots around everywhere, these Sasquatch everywhere. Let's see what happens. And think about it. That's quite an interesting concept because if you are a scientist and you're trying to figure out how a society is going to react rather to things like that, that would be an interesting concept to put down these weird creations and see what happens. This would also go against the whole interfering thing because then that is a clear interference and they're going to change the experiment because of that. But maybe that is the experiment. Maybe from day dot, the idea of gods, the idea of mythology, you know, when we're thinking about these weird creatures like the Pegasus, maybe these all did exist, but they were purely a science experiment. Now, cryptids could also be workers. There's the concept that what we see on the planet are workers. So think It sort of happens in the 40K universe, but also think Star Wars with the Chewbacca's, with the Wookiees and all that, with Chewbacca's people. Using these, essentially what I'm getting at is that they're, a lot of people might think that maybe the Sasquatch, the Mothman, all these entities are another alien. They've just been brought along for the ride. They're being used for a purpose. Now, more so, a lot of people believe this in the way of Sasquatch, that they're a laborer of sorts, maybe a scout to go out and scout out ideas and scout out areas and find resources and do these checks that they couldn't do. Maybe because a lot of people have said they've shot at them and they've never left a wound on them. Potentially this could be because they're a biologically created being. This is just a concept, remember. This isn't my belief, so I don't believe any of this, to be honest. This is what the concept is. So the other idea is that they're lower beings being used by the aliens. And another concept. Now, let's get away from the aliens and think about this more of the way of the gods. Like, think of Earth as a garden for the gods to simply look at whenever they want. It could be an expression of a god. So when we think about things like cryptids and these weird creatures, maybe it is the purest form of an expression of a god. The god has an idea, the god type character, creature, whatever it is, has a thought, and these thoughts can be created into. That's a whole different concept, but it's definitely interesting. If we're thinking of us as a zoo or as an observatory experiment, but being run by a god, like creature, or god-like entity, I should say. Potentially, that's what we're looking at. Potentially, we're looking at this is a will of theirs. Maybe they're playing games. Maybe they just want to fuck with us. I don't know. This could also be a mixture of demons, angels type belief in the paranormal. This could be that them writing their own stories. I mean, you think about a massively multiplayer video game like World of Warcraft, for instance, or Elder Scrolls Online. Whenever the story is getting a little bit boring, they chuck in a downloadable content pack to make us all go, ooh, I want to get back into the game. I'm interested again. Now, maybe think about it like this. They could be a capitalistic society still. They could be a society that makes money off this. Maybe the whole observatory planet thing is a money spin, also an experiment designed by scientists. Think about what we're doing on Mars at the moment. What we're doing on Mars couldn't be getting done without a lot of backing from a lot of powerful people. And it's only happening because of the love of Mars at the moment. And those backers, those financial supporters, will throw a lot of money at these things. And it's quite interesting. So maybe to make the show a little bit more interesting, maybe every so often they throw us a curveball and they chuck in a Bigfoot or two. Who knows? Once again, concepts. Now, what about ghosts? So ghosts could potentially be the scientists themselves. This could be a holographic interpretation of them, so they can actually go onto the planet and do visual inspections at a planet side level. This could be the handlers, the workers. This could be things that we can't see. Maybe we, when we think about animals being able to see spirits, we get a lot of animals that react strangely when there's a ghost in the room, for instance. That's the running story anyway. Now what if we were designed, let's say we were designed by these things, and we were designed to not see them. You know, maybe they exist in a different light form than what we do. Maybe they exist in a light form that we can't see with the rods and cones in our eyes. This is possible. There are certain things we can't see because of the rods and cones and the way our eyeballs work. So what would happen if they've gone, okay, you know what, we're going to design them so they can't see us. But then every so often, because of a evolution of what they've created, maybe it's a glitch in our design. Maybe it's a glitch in their design. Every so often, we do actually see them. You know, we we perceive this as what we call a ghost, and that's just the running thing. So that's a very interesting concept that we could look at. It could also be workers intervening. Maybe there's something around this area that needs to stop. So when we think about hauntings that happen in a lot of things like on the sides of roads, or we see a lot of hauntings happening in certain mental institutions and things like that, maybe this is their way of gradually going, you know, we're going to send a couple of warning signs to say, hey, this isn't cool, like this isn't a good place, we want you to change it, fix it, or go away from it, just don't come near it. Maybe this was an older concept they use, it's starting to wear off nowadays because we're becoming more used to these horror style concepts. These are all if we've got this on the table of Earth being a terrarium or an observatory experiment, these are all things that can be kept on the table. So also, what if ghosts are tourists? Ghosts could purely be tourists that have been given some sort of technology to not be able to be seen. Then that technology stuffs up and gradually we can see them every so often. And they're just down here because maybe, you know, everyone seems to think that when we come across extraterrestrials, they're going to be better than us in every way possible. What if they are just us? What if we have evolved in such a manner that we are so far ahead, and that what we've created, what we are living right now, is purely an ant farm? So an alien ant farm, not a bad band. So what? Think about that. We would evolve to a point where we could create humans out of nothing. We could create these tiny little versions. And we do that with video games. We do that with ant farms and ant colonies. We do that with fish tanks, with terrariums, with zoos. We do this right now. Currently, I can guarantee you there's a ton of you that have little animals running around your house somewhere that you own, whether it's a dog, cat, fish, bird, whatever. We all have something like this. And what it is, it's taking something that we deem as normally wild and putting it into a cordoned off area and calling it our own. Now, what's to say that in a million years that we're not doing this, that we're not growing our own little tiny humans on a planet? And then that's the new sea monkeys, the new ant farms. You know, once you put aside a lot of ethics and a lot of things that the concepts that we have nowadays, when you think about that, you go, well, yeah, if they get rid of all of that ethical conundrums that come with it, and they just go, well, you know, this is how it is now. My kids want that new Planet Earth simulation thing where they, you know, they sprinkle dust on the little ball, and then all of a sudden they can zoom into it and they can see all these things growing on there. Yeah, it's a really cool thing, and we can grow humans and stuff. And that isn't really if we're going to put aliens and extraterrestrials on the table, if we're going to put the idea that we're being overseen by something of a higher power than us and a higher intellect than us, this isn't to be taken off the table. This is a concept. This is something that we could really run with. They could be voyeurs. They could be people who just pay because this is what they like to do. Now, think about like this. I can have my garden, and I love my garden, but there's always I go online and I watch videos of other people's gardens to see what they've done, to see what I could do better. Now, what if a holographic projection onto another person's garden was real? Now, right now, let's say Facebook came out with a concept and said, well, came out with a, not a concept, they came out with a an ability using VR to be able to take your, be able to view somebody else's garden. So YouTube would become and I do see this happening. I do believe that this is a real thing that is going to happen eventually. I eventually do believe that we're going to have a YouTube where it is a VR style thing, where we're not simply watching a video, but we're actually sitting in the studio that the people are in. And we can feel like we're part of the conversation. So when we do things like our super chats and our comments and things like that, it'll be like we are actually there. We'll actually voice these things rather than just type them in and hope they get listened to. We could see that with these outdoor things as well. Maybe you put on the headset and now you're bungee jumping out of a off a bridge. Maybe you're jumping out of an airplane. Maybe you are rifle in your hands and you're reimagining the some of the conflicts during the war. Maybe you're back in Gallipoli. These are things that eventually we're already got the I won't say we've got the structure there. We've got very much the ground soil has been turned. And imagine in a million years what VR will be. So if you consider that as a point, this all could be 100% real. We could be just part of some sick, grotesque experiment. Terrible to think. It's not a great thought. I don't like the idea of it, but it's something that we have to think about. Now, the UFOs and the aliens we see, once again, they could be voyeurs, they could be students of the scientists come to take part and learn. They could be the scientists themselves. They could once again be tourists. They could be the handlers. Once again, same as the ghosts, these could be flyovers just to pay to do it. I mean, we're paying people to go to near orbit now. And float around with in Richard Branson's vehicles. We will be paying Elon Musk eventually to take us into space. That's not far away. That's within our lifetimes. If you're around about 30 right now, that is within your lifetime. That you, eventually there will be an Uber space. That's not maybe not in our anytime soon, but it will be in our lifetime. So these could also be monitoring systems, the ghosts, UFOs, things like that. These could all be monitoring systems to go down and check. Maybe the Tic Tac UFOs that we're seeing being landing in the ocean, maybe they are just taking samples. Because I know that, think about your plants, think about your fish. I take pH samples of my soil to make sure my plants are going really, really well. And to balance out certain plants, because certain plants need more acidity and some other plants need more alkaline soil. With my bonsai, today, if anyone looked on the Instagram, yesterday rather, you would have seen, it'll be yesterday to you now, you would have seen that I put up my own version of terrarium. It's a terrarium that I built myself. And honestly, it was so cheap. I built it out of, it was like 90 cents for the container from a local hardware shop. And then everything else was moss that I gathered from leftover moss from a nursery. I just said to them, look, do you mind if I'm buying some plants? Do you mind if I chuck a bit of moss in? They said, yeah, we've got tons of it. So if take that as a concept and you go, well, I check my soil rates. I check my water to make sure it's not doesn't have too much of you know. I'm blanking on what I check at the moment because I'm on air. But I check for different levels. We check for pH levels in soil and water. Now, what's to say that if we are just an experiment, then they're not sending these probes down to come down and check. You know, what if the Tic Tac ship is purely just a drone just to come and check soil samples and things like that. This would make a lot of sense when we think about aliens overall coming down. A lot of people said they've found these alien-like beings grabbing things off the ground or stuffing things into cylinders and bottles and jars. And this could all be, once again, just collecting data to make sure their little experiment is working the way they want it to. Now, when we think about the paranormal and supernatural, these could be a few different things. Now, these could be glitches in the system, things they didn't expect. These could be a phenomenon that they didn't expect. A lot of this, I believe, could be unexpected results. We, once again, think that they are these high beings that know everything. What I don't think they do know everything. If they do exist, potentially, they are just a more evolved version of us, and they don't know as much as what we think they do, though. So that could mean that they haven't discovered the meaning of life. They've figured out how to manipulate it. They've figured out how to technologically advance it to a point where they don't need gods or anything anymore. But doesn't mean that gods and things of those concepts don't exist. So these could be anomalies that appear to them that they go, well, we can't explain it either. Just like what we have right now in real life, we have these anomalies that we can't explain. The other thing is, sometimes we might do things that they don't predict, such as nukes and nuclear reactions. They probably never predicted that we would come up with something like that. So what do? Well, they would send beings down to bring us into line, to keep us into check. Maybe they stir up tensions, or maybe they calm tensions down. You know, these are very controlled things. If I think about a fish tank I used to have, I once put in a certain type of fish, and that type of fish became basically got put down the bottom of the pecking order, and they were getting their fins ripped apart by these other fish. Now, nothing in the books said that these other fish would do this. Nothing online, even the vet and the pet store said, no, they will work perfectly together. No, this was a phenomenon that I couldn't or they couldn't predict. So we removed the fish, put them in their own bowl, and they thrived. Now, what if we're thinking the same thing? Now, but instead of removing something so it can thrive, they are instead finding other ways. Maybe it's telepathy, or maybe it's control of other measures. Maybe it's causing earthquakes and storms, things like that. Maybe they're causing things to slow us down. Like these are all concepts that we need to think about. And once again, as I said, these aren't things that I 100% believe in. These are things that it's sort of that monster under the bed. You don't believe in the monster under the bed, but I can guarantee you tons of people tuck their leg in or they run to the bed on the way back from getting a glass of water because they believe there's something there. And they know there's nothing there, but it's fun to scare ourselves sometimes. And in this case, I believe the same thing. I think this is a fun way to spook ourselves, if you will. Now, we're going to go to a break right now, and after this, we'll get into... There's a bit more crazy stuff I want to talk about, and then we'll get into some of the sciencey stuff at the end. This is going to be a much longer episode than usual, so please hang in there, and we'll be talking to you right after the break.
Your
Welcome back to the Oddballsy podcast. Yes, that was one of bands I've been playing for last 2 years. So that's The Inventors with their song Blood Milk. I really do enjoy that song. A little bit grim, a little bit dark, but very cool tune. Alrighty, so we're going to get back into it. Now, we've got some crazy stuff to talk about right now. There's some really weird out there stuff. So we've been talking about the idea of the zoo hypothesis, that is that planet Earth is nothing but a zoo for extraterrestrials to watch us and to view us through, or that we are a terrarium to gods or a terrarium even to the aliens. And this brings about some interesting concepts, and honestly, this is a drinking game now because I've said concepts that many bloody times. Now, what about some of these other ideas? So, Earth is essentially an animal or a being. This was also known as Gaia. This was the actual belief of what that was. So, Gaia was the belief that Mother Earth is an entity, and that she has a soul and that she exists in a physical way, that what we live on is a god of sorts. The other idea with Gaia is that she's a spirit and the earth spirit. So the theory is the Gaia hypothesis. The Gaia hypothesis has both scientific and philosophical components. Gaia is theorized to be a living entity that is greater than the sum of all the living and non-living aspects of the earth. Is in proposing this theory, James Lovelock sought to explain the many complex natural mechanisms that the Earth has for regulating things such as climate and biological diversity. In this theory, the whole Earth is a sentient being that regulates processes in the natural environment by balancing various aspects of it against others. So think that we are the little sucker fish, I've gone blank what they're called, on the bottom of a whale, or we are even less than that. We are the microorganisms that are on the whale. And so the idea is that Gaia is this being that we live on. Now, to put this concept in, to put this hypothesis into, so this is an interesting sort of mind game, if you will, thought experiment maybe. Combine the zoo hypothesis with the Gaia hypothesis. And what do you get is, well, what you end up achieving from that is that Gaia is the animal, the creature that the aliens are viewing is Gaia, is the Earth. The Earth is the creature that they're viewing. When you go to a zoo, you don't look at a rhinoceros and go, "Ooh, those microorganisms on its back are called this, 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 and this. It must have this type of bacteria living around its toes." We don't think like that, or around its hooves, I should say. We don't think like that. What we think is, hey, there's a rhinoceros. I came to a zoo to see a rhinoceros. So potentially, we're just an effect. We're just something that comes with the greater beast. And so this combined, the smashing of the two theories together creates this very interesting thought process that how many other planets are actually a creature if we follow that concept. Now, that could mean that our whole universe, once again, is being viewed from the lens of creatures that can see us from a much more zoomed out way, or can move between visuals. So maybe they don't exist in the plane of existence that we live in. Maybe they don't exist in the way that we live in. They exist maybe in space. Space, what we see, is such a big thing that we can't fully see what it is. I mean, if you shrink down to the size of a microorganism, you're not going to see, hey, that's a tree up there. You're going to see blurs of light. You're going to see blurs of color and blurs of patterns if you can see in color. And the idea of this is that we look out into space and we see stars and we see this black and this colorization and all this. And what we're really seeing is just blur. And what is actually out there is much more, because we're nothing but bacteria. Very interesting concept. Very cool thought experiment. So have a think about that. We set off a nuke, or we go to war, and we don't think anything of it. Like, we think much of it for ourselves and for the planet, but does the planet notice? We don't know, because we're such a small organism on the side of the planet. Once again, I don't believe this. I do believe that we're on Earth, floating around our sun, all the normal stuff. But it's very cool to think about. And when you think about this concept, drink, that we are just living on this being, well, potentially that has ramifications for so many different things. So when we look at, say, let's go back to the rhinoceros that we look at the zoo. If we see that it has a skinned knee and that it has all this sort of pus coming out of the knee, that was caused by maybe an injury, but the pus and everything is caused by bacteria creating a infection. Now, what if us setting off a nuke is seen as just a bacteria creating an infection? We put a lot of pride on our own shoulders as being this amazing group of people, when essentially we are just energy passing on information to other forms of energy. Yeah, it's grim, but that could be it exactly. So here's another one as we're ticking off our bingo list of weird Earth concepts, and it is that Earth is in fact a space station or an experimental orb station out in so an organic space station. So what could we look at with this? Well, essentially, we don't know 100%. I'm not saying Hollow Earth, but we have never been to the center of the Earth. That's impossible with the technology we have right now. We haven't even been to the bottom of the Mariana Trench. These are things that we have not discovered. We know how far it goes down, but as people, we have not been there. We've had drones go down pretty far in the Mariana Trench, but we still haven't been to the exact dead bottom of it. We always find another cliff that leads to another gorge that leads to another canyon. It's quite an interesting place, the Mariana Trench. We'll probably do a whole episode on that too. Now, if we haven't even been to the core, now the idea is that the core is a man-made object. And what we've done is we've created a warm core, or something, an extraterrestrial group. It's created a warm core to create the Earth, essentially. Now, this would be a lot of terraforming, that type of technology. Obviously, we don't have today, but it's technology. Once again, we are considering, we are looking at terraforming. We're looking at very, very caveman-like versions of terraforming on Mars. The ability to change the planet so that water and things like that can exist there, or we can use mineral deposits to allow for the creation of clouds and the creation of rain, which will then allow for the creation of planting seeds and things like that, getting the soil pHs right, things like that. We're already looking at a very, very basic version of terraforming just in that concept there. So let's look at a society that's, say, 10 million years older than us. 10 million years isn't a great big thing in the grand scheme of things. The universe being, well, the galaxy being 100,000 million years old. Desk is throwing things at me. So when we think about that, if you've got a 10 million year old society, they've far surpassed us. They know how to do intergalactic travel. They know how to, cloning's already been gone and done. These are people who have got possibly unending lives. You know, we don't know what sort of tech they would have. But the idea that they could create a create their own version of an exoplanet, or their own version of a terraformed satellite. Now, what would this be good for? Well, think about the fictional. If you're not a Warhammer 40K fan, I get it. There's not. There's some love it. I love it. I really am into it. Now, in that fictional universe, the humans have different planets for different reasons. You have farming planets. You have planets that are for keeping people. You know, for civilization. You have engineering planets, mechanical planets, planets that are designed to make tanks and to make guns and to make things like this. You've got citadel planets, which is where that, you know, you keep massive army units and things like that. There are so many different planets used for different things. Mining planets, where the whole planet is just mined until it's destroyed, essentially. There's even prison planets. Now, think about, once again, bring it back to what we do here on Earth. In real life, what did we do? What did colonial England do? Colonial England had farming lands. It had whole countries just for farming. India was a perfect example of farming certain resources for the motherland. America was supposed to be, the original concept was going to be a civilization land mixed with a farming land. Australia was a prison island. We think about what happens with what we do as humans. Now, what if that line of thinking still exists? What if the extraterrestrials we're talking about are more of a colonial style group? They never got past that. Well, they would probably want to have things like a farming planet and things like that. And if you're going to do that, another good idea to have would be experiment planets. Experimental planets where you can just throw everything weird onto that planet and just go, yep, we're just going to see what happens. We're going to chuck in a Bigfoot. We're going to see what happens. That could be another thing. This would be so a space station that is in the core of a planet. You know, this is all very science fiction stuff, and that's why I don't believe it. But it's really, really, really cool stuff to think about. So that's essentially what some of those big concepts are. And the idea of terrarium for the gods and terrarium for higher beings. Now, gods essentially could just be what we perceive as, what we perceive as gods could just be a being that's higher and more intellectual than us. Now, a terrarium for them could just mean exactly that. Maybe they just want their own little Garden of Babylon that they can just have sitting on the desk. What if that's what it is? What if our universe is purely sitting on the desk of some corporate person that we consider a god, because they every so often they might balance our pH levels and maybe they move things around so that we have a better summer than we did last year. Maybe the bad weather is when someone puts us too close to the heat lamp or something like that. Who knows? I mean, these are all theories. It's some crazy stuff, but once again, cool to think about. Cool to spook yourself a bit with. So let's go into break away from. This is just going to be a little breath mint after the main weird stuff as we get into the science stuff. So 2020 was pretty crazy, but we found some pretty interesting extraterrestrial evidence during that time. So we found the ET. We had these weird transmissions. So weird signals happening in the universe is never aliens, until maybe it is. Earlier this month, researchers announced that they had captured a very mysterious beam of energy in the radio part of the electromagnetic spectrum at 980 megahertz, coming from the closest star to our own, Proxima Centauri, which is just 4.2 light years away, hosts one gas giant and one rocky world 17% larger than Earth, that happens to be in its star's habitable zone, so right in the Goldilocks zone, meaning liquid water could exist there. The unexplained signal reportedly shifted slightly while it was being observed, in a way that resembles a shift caused by the movement of a planet. Researchers are excited but cautious, explaining that they will need to figure out if more mundane sources such as a comet, hydrogen cloud, or even human technology could be mimicking an alien signal. We had alien bacteria found the possibility of alien bacteria living on the clouds of Venus. So astrobiologists were in September, when news broke of potential evidence of life in the upper clouds of Venus, the announcement pointed to the presence of phosphine, a rare and often poisonous gas that on Earth at least is almost always associated with living organisms. With its hellish surface temperature, outlandish pressure, and sulfuric acid clouds, Venus has long played a second fiddle to the seemingly more potentially habitable Mars, but a team aimed both the James Clerk Maxwell Telescope in Hawaii and the Atacama Large Submillimeter Array in Chile at Venus and picked up phosphine signature in a Venusian cloud layer with downright Earth-like temperatures and pressures. Terrestrial bacteria are known to thrive in some pretty tough conditions, making the biological explanation a not unreasonable one. So that's what I mean. These are all some pretty weird stuff that we found. Of course, we had Oumuamua. There's a lot more data coming out that this could have actually been a man-made thing or part of a man-made thing. The Navy declassifies the UFO videos. Then lost scientists are believing that the Milky Way could have more ocean worlds than not. Earth bugs breathe hydrogen. Most Earthlings require oxygen to survive, but oxygen isn't common in the cosmos, making up about 0.1% of the ordinary mass of the universe. There's far more hydrogen and helium, and many planets, including gas giants like Jupiter and Saturn, are made mostly from the light elements. In May, scientists took E. coli, a bacteria found in the guts of many animals, including humans, and ordinary yeast, a fungus used to bake bread and make beer, and try to see if they could live in different environments. Such microbes are already known to survive without oxygen, and when placed in a flask filled with either pure hydrogen or pure helium, they manage to grow, albeit at slower rates than usual. The findings suggest that when searching for organisms elsewhere in the universe, we might want to consider places that look don't look exactly like Earth. We found out that life could live around a black hole, Earth-sized worlds orbiting sun-like stars, but far more exotic configurations could exist, such as planets circling around and heated by a black hole. At first glance, such a scenario seems absurd, but contrary to popular depictions, black holes don't just suck in everything around them. Gravitationally stable orbits are possible, and the light from the cosmic background radiation, a relic with temperatures near absolute zero, from the early universe that permeates all of space, would get heated as it fell into the black hole. As a paper released in March showed, this could provide warmth and energy to any organisms that happen to evolve in such a strange location. And that'd be a very interesting concept as to what they would look like too. Now, when we talk about all of those things we just said, now the reason why I just went through all those, these are all very interesting things that you could have. When you think about terrariums, or when you think about zoos, we have specific zoos, specific types of terrariums, underwater terrariums, terrariums that don't use water at all, that use their own. They do use water, but in different ways. These are all very interesting things, and we do these things. We do these things on Earth. That's the interesting thing that I want to keep stressing, is that all these things that we talk about, these are things that we actually still do here on Earth in a very basic way, but nonetheless, we do it. A lot of other people point to chaos theory in the way planetary formations are made, such as exoplanets. And recently, almost 1,000 new exoplanets have been discovered and confirmed, and another 4,000 candidates are waiting to be assessed. So what's the problem? Well, the original theory of planet formation was derived to explain the only system we knew of at the time, our own. When others were being discovered, astronomers expected them to be at least somewhat like our own. That hope has been dashed. The more planetary systems we find, the more our own world stands out as the exception rather than the rule. Naturalism is no great friend of novelty. It likes to see one theory explain all. Weird worlds require weird explanations, and the more the weirdness mounts up, the less and less explanatory power remains in the conventional theory. They now have a mess of models, which have grown almost as exotic and plentiful as the planets they seek to explain. Kepler's results so far show that that exoplanets fall into three main categories. One, hot Jupiters. Two, giant planets with weird orbits. And three, super-Earths. Super-Earths are generally found in compact systems of two to four planets each, some of them orbiting their stars at impossibly close distances with yearly orbit periods ranging from 100 days down to just hours. Super-Earths orbit at least 40% of all nearby suns like stars, which makes them the most common type of exoplanet found. The long period eccentric giants make up about 10%, and the hot Jupiter freaks make up less than 1%. That means about 50% of suns like stars have planets. Space technology will improve in the future, so who knows, perhaps planets will be found around all stars. Now, yeah, so the interesting thing about all that, to break that down a little bit, is that we are seeming like we're the exception to the rules. So this is where a lot of people point out that we are, in actual fact, we're the man-made planet. Everything else may exist. We're just the experiment planet, and that's why we don't find any other life out there. That's where a lot of the believers in the zoo hypothesis point to. They say, look, there is nothing else out there because nothing else has been created. And with this new discovery, there's a lot of people saying, see, we're the exception. We are the weird ones. Our planet is the weird location. None of these other planets exist like we do. Whether that's because we exist because of that weirdness, or whether we exist because of other means, that's what they're getting at, is that these happen because of, we happen because we were created, not because we were, not because it was natural. A lot of people trying to say that it's because we are the exception. And the exception means that something must have happened. That's what they're saying. Something surely must have happened. So we've had a few other things. So I just want to bring up that when we talk about civilizations, Kardashev was a famous scientist. So this comes from the work of Nikolai Kardashev, and famous scale that bears his name, in his 1964 essay titled Transmission of Information by Extraterrestrial Civilizations. He proposed a three-tiered scheme, the Kardashev scale, for characterizing a civilization based on the amount of energy it was able to harness. This is the list that he made. So a type 1 civilization are those that can be and store all of the energy available on its planet. They can use and store all the energy available on its planet, rather. The top two of civilization are those that are capable of using and controlling energy of its entire star system. And a type three civilization are those that can control the energy of an entire galaxy. Among SETI researchers, the notion that there could be a type one and type two civilizations within our galaxy seems entirely rational. For starters, the Milky Way galaxy contains between 200 and 400 billion stars, and the current estimates say that there could be 6 billion Earth-like planets orbiting within their respective sun's habitable zones. In addition, the Milky Way is almost as old as the universe itself, 13.51 billion years old, whereas the solar system is only 4.6 billion years old. And modern humans, Homo sapiens, have existed for only a tiny fraction of Earth's history, 200,000 years. Based on this, it stands to reason that that humanity is not the first intelligent species to emerge in our galaxy, and that there could be many ETs that have existed for eons. So, that's interesting. That's sort of what a lot of people are using. I'm giving you the science that people are using, probably in a bastardized way most of the time, definitely in a bastardized way, to sort of express what they believe. It's an interesting concept, nonetheless. Drink. What did I just close there? Here's a interesting little footnote as well. We already have a satellite that treats Earth as a terrarium. So the SMAP satellite, or the SMAP, lives in a stark white clean room at Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. So this was back in 2015. It has been launched since then. So the antenna is designed to collect signals pinging up from Earth's 426 miles below to SMAP, also known as the Soil Moisture Active Passive Instrument. The Earth looks like a gigantic glass chamber of carbon and water, a setup similar to scientist Joseph Priestley's experiment in 1771, when he discovered the carbon cycle. Priestley tapped a mouse and a mint plant, trapped a mouse and a mint plant inside a glass jar and found that the plant inhaled carbon dioxide, CO2, for photosynthesis and exhaled water vapor and oxygen, which the mouse breathed and thrived on. The carbon got used by the plant to make leaves and stems. Scientists will use SMAP for their version of this experiment, with the planet as their glass jar. At the Arctic Circle, stands of spruce, fir and pine form one of the largest contiguous forests on the planet. These boreal forests and other vegetated areas are like the mint plant. They absorb CO2 from the atmosphere, and scientists call them net carbon sinks because traditionally they take about 30% of the emissions from fossil fuel burning. But as temperatures rise and the summer season lengthens, the soil in Alaska and the Arctic have been thawing. Forests are getting drier and wildfires now rage more frequently, releasing carbon. So scientists do not know how much longer these forests will remain carbon sinks. Measurements are key, and this is SMAP's task. Once it is in space, or it is in space now, it provides the most frequent and highest resolution measurements of exactly how frozen the ground is in northern latitudes. So here we are. We've got the SMAP website. So it's smap.jpl.nasa.gov, and you'll see a description of the mission, and you'll see a picture of the actual satellite as well. So the Soil Moisture Active Passive mission is orbiting an observatory that measures the amount of water in the surface soil everywhere on Earth. A detailed description can be found in the SMAP handbook. It was launched in January 2015 and started orbiting in April 2015. The SMAP radio meter has been operating flawlessly, the radar instrument ceasing operation early 2015 due to failure of radar power supply, collected close to 3 months of science data. The prime phase of 3 years was completed in 2018, and since then SMAP has been extended into a new operational phase. The topsoil layer is the one which the food we eat grows and where other vegetation lives. Moisture in the soil indirectly affects us in a variety of ways. In the course of its observations, SMAP will also determine if the ground is frozen or thawed in colder areas of the world. It's an amazing concept. It's the idea of being able to check the whole planet from an eye in the sky. And drought is going to be a big thing. And it's really interesting. This thing's been around there since 2015. And how much I wonder, I haven't done too much research into this, but how much I wonder has it changed? Because we in Australia just came out of a very, very bad drought in 2020. And well, basically pretty much from 2016 onwards, we've been in some pretty bad drought times. So probably even earlier than that, to be honest. So yeah, why I wanted to bring up SMAP was because it essentially shows us that we already treat the planet. We're already looking at the planet in the concept of a terrarium. We do that right now. And to think that another society, another culture that's far more advanced than us wouldn't already think like that, it might be a little bit ignorant maybe. So maybe we're just out there floating around and we're being watched by everyone. Now, if any of you got kids and you want to have a bit of fun and show them the idea of what a terrarium is, the best way you can do it is get a plate with a plastic. You can use this with a Coke bottle. You cut out the middle of the Coke bottle and you essentially fill the bottom with dirt, moss, plants, whatever you have, especially stuff from straight from your garden. Don't get anything from the garden shop that's been sitting in the sun for days. Straight from your garden, put it in there, build it up, make it look nice, and then put the lid back on, and you can release and increase the humidity in there by releasing and opening the top of the bottle. Fill the bottom up with some water. Obviously, I recommend holes in the bottom to allow moisture to release, depending on how humid and how much water you want in there. And the really cool thing about this is that it shows how these plants can grow. You can change the weather patterns essentially in there if you want. By not having holes in the bottom, you can have a more arid type of plant growing in there, maybe more succulents and things like that. But experiment with it yourself and you'll see how interesting the concept is. And if we're doing that now, what if someone's doing that to you somewhere else? What if we're just sitting in somebody else's terrarium? Who knows? It's been an excellent show. I really enjoyed doing this show. We went far, far longer than we normally do. So that was almost 20 minutes over our normal time. So thank you so much for being here and listening to the whole thing. If you've made it to this point, make sure you follow me on Twitter at Aussie Oddball. Also, the Instagram, Facebook page is TheOddballAussie at hotmail.com. You can also check out the Tee Public store where you can get some really cool merch. I'll be updating the merch again soon with some of the new artwork that I've been doing and being made. I hope you've all enjoyed this. I probably went off into a million tangents during this one because I just found it really, really interesting. I really enjoyed doing the research on this. So once again, a show that I thought was going to probably last maybe half an hour, 40 minutes. I thought there's not much in this. It just kept growing. Everything more and more came out. We got the idea that the planet is a alien-made satellite. We got the Gaia stuff. And as I said, once again, this is all more of a fun thought experiment rather than something that I actually believe in. But it's really cool to think about, really cool to sit there and go, what if, you know? All right, I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. And make sure you do me one thing. Look after each other and stay safe out there in the weird. Good night.